Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Ardello Training Podcast, where we bridge the gaps in strength, performance, and injury prevention. My name is Scott Ardella, and welcome to episode number 240. My guests this week are Dr. Tim Brown and Josh Trent. Now, Josh is a return guest here on the show. He's a wellness expert. He's a great guy. And you can find out more about Josh at his website, wellnessforce.com. Dr. Tim Brown, he is the founder of IntelliSkin, a human technology company, and he is the co-medical director for the World Surf League. He is a world-renowned chiropractor and movement specialist who trains athletes at the highest levels of professional sports. You will hear about that in this week's session. This is a really good chat that has a lot of great insights, ideas, and considerations to improve movement and optimize performance. A few things we cover are, where do you start? Do you start with breath or do you start with posture to improve performance? This is really interesting, and you're going to hear Dr. Brown's perspective on that. You're going to hear about the myth of the balanced athlete and what that means. You're going to hear about the top three posture problems that most people have and ways to fix these problems. And you're going to hear about some simple breathing practices that you can apply today and a lot more. This is just some information that scratches the surface in this interview session. So a few quick things before we get into the interview. First of all, I will be speaking at this year's International Society of Sports Nutrition annual conference in Clearwater Beach, Florida this June. This is always a fantastic event, and I'm excited and very honored to be speaking at this year's meeting. I will be talking about the latest science and practical applications of kettlebell training. You can go to sportsnutritionsociety.org to learn more, or I will definitely have a link to that conference in the show notes for this week's episode. It's really, really a great time and a great learning experience for all. And speaking of kettlebells, if you are at least an intermediate kettlebell enthusiast and you are looking for a proven program, the Kettlebell Domination Program is a highly effective 5-week kettlebell training program that is designed around the kettlebell fundamentals. The kettlebell fundamentals are the swing, the goblet squat, the press, the get up, the clean, and the snatch. This is a very challenging, reproducible, and powerful program. To learn more about it and find out if it's a fit for you and what you're looking for, or to help your clients or athletes, go to ardellatraining.com/dominate to learn more about the Kettlebell Domination Program. All right, so let's get into the interview this week. I know you're going to get a lot out of this session, lots of great insights, and I had a lot of fun and learned a lot, and I know you will too. So let's do it. Let's get into the session, and I will circle back at the end of the interview. Enjoy, guys. All right, guys, joining the show this week is Dr. Tim Brown and Josh Trent. Josh is a return guest to the podcast. Guys, I'm really excited to have you here. I think we're going to have great conversation and share some great knowledge in this session today. So I appreciate it. And guys, why don't you do this, if you could? If you could just share a little bit about your backgrounds and really your area of expertise before we get into the questions.
Yeah, sure. Scott, thanks for having us. We're thrilled to be here and look forward to hearing from your listeners and kind of helping them to direct us in what they want to learn about today. But my background is working. I'm a sports chiropractor, licensed since 1983, and started my career working with the Pro Beach Volleyball Tour, the AVP, as a player, and then soon became their first medical director. And the philosophy behind my direction was to have a interdisciplinary group as opposed to one particular group kind of overseeing everything. I really wanted everybody to have an equal shot at it. If you had something to bring to the table as an athlete or for the athlete, then we wanted you on the team. So anywhere from an orthopedic surgeon all the way down to, you know, a sports nutritionist and acupuncturist and everybody in between, were on the team. And I was able to really learn a lot from them. and create a real nice functional system along the way.
Yeah, Scott, this is so fun to be back on. And, you know, I'm sitting here, we're at the Zen Den with Dr. Tim Brown at his home here in Newport. And I could not be more excited to come back on the show. You know, we've had this beautiful partnership, this really strong partnership around physical intelligence, which is what you dive into so much on your podcast, Scott. So understanding my story, it's changed so much, but it's been the past 14 years of just exploring this physical and emotional intelligence so that men and women can live their life well. And, you know, you've been on the show yourself personally. So we're just continuing that journey, man, every single day of just, you know, being humble, but also moving forward fairly aggressively in what really helps men and women live their life well.
Nice. So we're going to talk about breath, posture, and intentional movement. Let's start with the intentional movement piece first. And do you guys have a working definition of what is intentional movement? How do you define that?
Well, I think Tim is the professional when it comes to movement and movement theory, but I just think that all humans were put on this planet to eat, move, and sleep well. And so, you know, along with looking at the lens of, you know, ancestral health, everything we've done over the past 10,000 years plus, it just comes down to this basic movement pattern of lunging, pushing, and pulling, some kind of a level change, and then rotation. So that's my definition, but I know Dr. Tim has a way more powerful and way more clinical definition than I do.
Yeah, it's just, life is movement, movement is life. I think we could all agree upon that, if nothing else today. And, we started off as runners, running away from animals, trying to survive. So that's kind of how we evolved. And certainly in society today, things have changed where we're sitting, you know, 9.2 hours a day on average in the United States and sleeping 7.3. So we're sitting more than we're sleeping. And, you know, we've probably all heard the diatribe about, you know, death by chair. That's really true. So, understanding movement is critical, whether you're an athlete or whether you're someone who just wants to be active and have the freedom to move throughout your life. And once you stop moving, man, it becomes a lot rougher. You know, we stop moving usually because of pain or laziness, but one or the other will get you. And when that happens, the quality of life is measurably decreased. So, movement is really critical, but also setting up that movement is really important. Understanding that you have to have a concept and you have to have a feeling of what alignment feels like and what good breath, good diaphragmatic breath feels like before you can really get on your movement journey. So that's really what we're doing right now with the professional athletes I'm treating and training is to really break them down and instead of really training to get them bigger, stronger, faster in conventional ways, we're getting them stronger and faster by teaching them these mechanics of alignment and breath and making sure that they understand that that can not only make you function better, but it certainly protects your body better. Scott, joint centration is really kind of everything. If I had to put it into a nutshell, that would be about the smallest thing I could do is say we are what we eat, think, and do. And joint centration is kind of the most important thing if we want to have good quality movement the rest of our lives.
Let's talk about joint centration. I think that's really an important topic. Can you define that? And then talk about joint centration in different parts, different body parts. Mm. So maybe spine, shoulder.
Yeah. Sure. Well. Certainly, with a lot of the overhead athletes I work with, the shoulder is an issue, and obviously the shoulder is not just one joint, but it's four joints. So super complex, and for that complexity, the payoff is better range of motion. But what happens when you're throwing, your accelerators just in a nutshell become much stronger than your decelerators. And that creates a muscle imbalance. And then actually the stronger muscles or the overused and understretched muscles tend to pull that joint towards its shortness. And that pulls it out of the center of the joint. In the center of the joint, your nervous system, your muscles, everything works with rhythm and synchrony. And when you're out of center, the body has to struggle for one muscle to work more than it's used to working or doing a job that it wasn't designed to do. And that creates not only poor movement, but along with that, you move your body out of alignment, and that's just trouble.
Joint centration or lack of joint centration, I should say, can lead to injury. I mean, is it fair to say that?
I mean, that's that's certainly what I'm seeing clinically, you know, and in the research that I've, the literature that I've read, it certainly seems to back it up.
Correcting muscle imbalance is really the key to maximizing that, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't know that you ever do fully create balance. I've never met a balanced athlete in the almost 40 years that I've been working on professional athletes. It's kind of a dream, you know, even if I even reference Da Vinci's The Balanced Man, you know.
Right.
Look at his right leg, you know, completely externally rotated. Nobody's balanced, you know. And so if you look at and Scott, with your background in physical therapy, I know that everybody has one hip that's tighter than the other. There's not one athlete I've ever met I don't want to drop names today, but from the NBA or NFL or MLB, NHL, I've never met an athlete whose right side was the same as their left. In fact, as I've looked further into it, we're not designed to be balanced. We're designed to be asymmetrical. Everything that moves in the universe has a mathematical formula, and asymmetry is part of it, I'm afraid, which is kind of disturbing, because I've been trying to get everybody balanced for almost my whole career. But now I realize that balanced is the journey, certainly is the optimum, but you'll never get there. And moving towards balance is really what our goals are. And your balance, Scott's going to be different than mine. Josh is going to be different than ours. So finding that optimum for you is maybe a little different than finding it for me. And that's why I get pretty bummed out at our healthcare system these days. It doesn't allow us to take the time to really study each individual and give them a program that they can participate in, because it's not the clinic that's going to heal. It's not that hour that I spend on my patients each time that's going to heal them. It's really the lifestyle, their choices in the other 23 hours of the day. That's where I've really got to make the big change. Otherwise, what I'm doing becomes moot. I become a Band-Aid or an aspirin, and I really hate that.
Yeah. You know, going back to what you were just saying there about the balance and minimizing asymmetry, when is enough balance? When do you – because like you said, you can't have optimal balance. Let's say if we're talking shoulder mobility, one side versus the other. How do you know when – you've closed the gap that it's sufficient?
Well, certainly performance is one great measure, you know, where you were before you start and where you're at when you finish, but also recovery. You know, I think we don't look at recovery enough as a really great way to read where an athlete's at. So, you know, like I said in the beginning, I'm more about finding out what I can do to make these athletes recover better from the imbalances that they've created by doing training and doing, you know, their sport specific movement than I am anything else.
What are the, if you look at the athletes you work with and maybe the common postural problems that you see, what are maybe the top three things that you typically see?
Yeah, it's forward carried head, rounded shoulders, and a tilted pelvis and rotated pelvis. So tilted and rotated. Those are probably the top three. And the head follows the chest, and then the lower body follows the hips. So, we are kind of slaves to those areas. So when I look at somebody, I'm really looking at ankle dorsiflexion as a great measure of function. Hip mobility as another great measure, and then thoracic mobility as another one. And if they just pay attention to those three areas, I mean, if you listeners out there are looking for something to minimize what you really have to do to stay mobile and stay away from people like myself and Scott, it's about keeping mobile and at least in those areas, because those areas affect your core control, they affect your posture, and affect your mechanics, your gait mechanics.
Okay, so you have an athlete that has a forward head that you just described. They're kyphotic. They have a posterior pelvic tilt. What's the first thing you're going to do to assess?
Well, most of them have an anterior pelvic tilt, and so. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to watch them move. First, I'm going to watch them walk. Then I'm going to watch them squat. Then I'm going to watch them single leg quarter squat. Then I'm going to start to. Based upon what I see there, I'm going to start to palpate. I'm going to start to feel what their movement is. I'm going to lay them supinely on a table, and I'm going to very gently externally rotate their feet with my fingers, just passive rotation. I'm going to feel for resistance, and then I'm going to do the same thing on internal rotation. And these aren't classic orthopedic tests, but they really give me an idea of, okay, how bad off is this person, and what am I going to do next? Because there are obviously lots and lots of testing you can do, but I like to cut to the quick and spend as much time as I can doing the hands-on work. So I'm looking for symmetry in the hips, and usually that the pelvis is anterior. And what we found out, you know, what your listeners might have found the same as I have for most of my career, is thinking that the psoas is the culprit. And it's really not as much as we thought we were, as far as it tilting the pelvis anteriorly and rotating the pelvis as much as we thought it was. It's really iliacus. So that becomes a really key component to my treatment, is finding these muscles that are overused, understretched, and really spending a lot of time treating those muscles. Now, I treat differently. I treat muscles by working on the skin and then work down to the first layer of fascia, the first layer of resistance. I use a thing called Hilton's Law. Hilton's Law states that everything on the inside of your body grows nerves into your skin. And I believe we can affect those muscles by working on the skin. And I was turned on to this information through Vladimir Yanda back in the 80s, when I was really looking to figure out how I could better treat athletes and get a really nice, deep result, but obviously without going deep on the athlete, because that's contraindicated. I don't want to disconnect the athlete from their mind and their body. You can make them feel real good by working on them deeply, but it doesn't do a good job as far as their performance goes. So in sports massage and all these things, everything's very light and quick. And so I created a technique that we work on the skin very lightly, and we get a very, very deep and profound result. And that ended up taking me further into the taping game, the functional taping game, and then actually the functional apparel game later on in my career.
Yeah, my mistake there, because I think I said posterior pelvic tilt, and I meant anterior, and that obviously with the hip flexor tightness. So,
right, so right.
Thanks for clearing it up. Let's talk about technology. How do you use technology?
That's a big question,
yeah,
isn't
this is
it,
a
Scott?
Big question. Yeah.
Well, I think so, man. Well, technology, if you think about what technology really is, it's information.
And I should say, in the approach to posture. So
absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, kind of like the underbelly of all technology is that it's information. So look at the hieroglyphics. The hieroglyphics in ancient Egypt, they were information. That was technology. So whether it's something around tactile response that Tim has created, it's really the culmination of like three decades of this man's work, you know, having this smart compression cue people back into proper posture through that tactile response, through the skin response. But also, I think there's some interesting ways that we can keep people sedentary versus active and put that lopsided scale on the active part by using wearables, by using things like an Oura ring or a Fitbit, just general reminders that'll get people moving more throughout the day. So whether it's postural technology or movement reminder, behavior change technology, they're both really powerful, Scott. It's just like maybe one section could be, how do we get people to move? And then the next section could be, how do we get people to move with great posture?
I got to ask this question. So what are your thoughts on overusing technology, becoming over reliant on technology? Are there any dangers in that, in your opinion?
Yeah, I thoroughly believe that there are, in that, look, we got a volume control inside our body. Our body's trying to talk to us. We found out, you know, physiologically that we get a lot of communication from our gut and our heart that bypass our brain. And I believe that these senses that we have inside our body are critical to keep acute. And by that, I mean, we need to train them. We need to tap into them. You know, just like a blind person becomes very acute in their hearing and their ability to sense, we are our senses. And so I believe that I like it. You know, everybody can be helped by technology, I believe, but I think that we have to really recognize that we are the greatest technology and we need to feed it. And we, yeah, again, are what we eat, think, and do. And without those, without nurturing all those areas and relying on technology, I think we can maybe miss the boat a little bit and lose out on being able to really truly experience life at its greatest.
Something as simple as postural awareness, you know, let's just take again, athlete, forward head, rounded shoulders. Is there any value in postural awareness and telling someone, you know, chin tucked in, shoulders back, that type of thing?
Oh, I truly believe, because posture is hooked up to, you know, every subsystem in our body is affected by posture. So from breathing to mood to fight or flight, all those things are controlled by posture. If you've got bad posture, your body's in fight or flight. If you've got bad posture, you're not able to intake as much oxygen as you normally would. If you've got bad posture, you're compressing your organs and affecting your ability to digest and for organ function to really truly happen. We can go down the list, right? It's attached to everything. Almost like we've learned about fascia now. When I was in school, we cut all that stuff away. It wasn't even on the bodies by the time we got to them in our lab. And now we know fascia's grown into every cell in our body. It affects everything. So, you know, all these parts that we have, we've been making them for a while and throwing out the bad and keeping the good. And I think that it's really important to recognize all these parts and pay homage to them and respect them in our daily lives with what we kind of, like I said, what we eat, think, and do.
When you're starting to work with an athlete, client, patient, are you starting with breathing or are you starting with postural correction?
God, what a great question, Scott. Yeah, we absolutely start with alignment. We believe that you can't get a good breath if your body's not aligned properly. So that's the first thing, is to really kind of become aware of, you know, how does this machine line up properly, and become super cognizant of that. So we use different taping techniques or some of this wearable technology apparel. And I'm not against electronic technology by any means, because I know that everybody's sensory system is wired differently. You know, some people like heavy compression, some people like just a light touch, whatever's going to get the job done. And it's up to us as caregivers or trainers to really kind of not just go on railroad tracks for our career, where we have this one system that worked for us, so we're going to do everything this way. We've got to really keep open minds, and there's a lot of great thinkers out there. There's a lot of great ways to skin the cat. And I think as long as we use the principles of first alignment, then breath, then mobility, then stability, then strength, I think we're all going to have a lot of successes, no matter what techniques and modalities we use, as long as we use these things as an outline, as a structure for how we're going to help somebody accomplish their health goals and improving their ability to move without pain.
Josh and Tim, do you guys both align on your view of technology and how you would use it for posture, what we're talking about right now?
We've actually never had that conversation, but it's interesting. Like, maybe we can just have it live right now. Yeah. I think that as long as technology is the servant and we're the master, then it'll all work out. But what happens is you start plugging in AI and all this automated coaching to make the athlete or the participant completely disconnected from their regular senses. I think that's the danger. So it's up to us to take responsibility and really create intentionality behind the tool, whether it's a wearable or a reminder on your phone. So that's my view. I don't know, Tim, how you feel about it.
Well, I think it's, I've been working a little bit this last year with some MLB guys and then the NBA as a whole, and they're very interested in this technology. And, they're doing all they can to gather the data and turn it into something that's really usable. So I believe they're getting closer to it. And, like Under Armour, you know, they went off and spent $1 billion last year on buying up all these wearable technology companies. They want to know what you're doing 24/7, and then they're going to market to that. So, from that perspective, it's probably good for their business.
But it sells a lot of shoes.
From my perspective, you know, I think that there's probably some datas in there that are going to be very, very important and that we'll all be able to benefit from. I just don't know that the whole suite of datas is going to be something that we can really drive metrics from and really make good clinical decisions from. I hope that they do, but I don't know that that's going to happen. To me, it seems like with new technologies, it swings really wide on the first arc, and then it tends to settle somewhere back towards the middle. So I think some of these things are going to drop off, but I don't think it's ever going to go away. I think it's too important, and it's I think some of the stuff that the information they're going to give us in the future is going to be really vital.
And on top of that too, Scott, I just want to say that everything Tim's saying when it comes to the person being attuned is important, but I was at CES. I moderated this panel called Game Changers, and it was about breath, hydration, and sweat. And I got to tell you, like, just because people have the data doesn't mean they're willing to take inspired action from the data. You know, there's a big gap between knowing what your numbers are and actually having this health term behavior be, you know, long term. So we're still understanding, like, what's in the middle of knowing and doing when it comes to tech, and no one's really figured it out yet. I think that's what we'll see in the next 5 years.
You just mentioned CES. Can you talk a little bit about that? Kind of educate me on what that is and kind of what was your big learnings and takeaway from that experience?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Tim and I are both really passionate about how do we optimize human health? How do we optimize the human body? And so understanding all the different fitness and wellness companies that were at CES Vegas, which is Consumer Electronics Show, it's kind of the global meetup, right? It's where everybody goes that wants to learn about what technology is coming out. And so I moderated this panel with three companies, Level, Healby, and Life Fuels, breath, hydration, and sweat. And really it was around how do we take these devices and remind the human, have these mirrors of mindfulness. So it allows the human to drink more water, to move more efficiently, and to, for people that are more in the keto approach, how do we monitor their acetone through that breathing device? So that was the panel that I moderated. But I got to tell you, we still have a long way to go. I think we're really early in the health and wellness technology game. It's still the wild, wild west out there.
Tim, let me ask you. So I'm thinking of a statement I heard that athletic performance begins with good breathing. Would you agree with that, or would you say that athletic performance begins with good alignment with your approach?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm going to go with alignment. That's kind of where my my journey has taken me with regards to the clinical side of things, the on-site working on athletes kind of thing, and then also just, you know, all the lit search that, I like to do. You know, they're right next to each other.
Right.
But I think I think you got to have alignment before you have a really you're able to really get a nice, strong diaphragmatic breath and experience all the benefits that come with that.
Do you have a practice for teaching diaphragmatic breathing? I mean,
I have everybody gets a lesson. Everybody that comes through or lays down on my table is going to go through that because it really helps me to understand also where they're at as far as how do they know their body? Are they in their body? You know, do they can they really relate? And I found that those that have a very difficult time learning that, you know, initial 5 minutes of how do I stop my chest from moving? How do you get air into your belly? I mean, and there are lots of people that are like that. They just don't have that mechanic or that coordination. And what we learn in, about breath too is that it's inspiration is the easier part. It's the expiration that becomes the most difficult part, and the muscles that you have to train. Excuse me, that's the opposite. It's inspiration muscles that we have to train. It's the expiration muscles that do it by themselves naturally. So when we get these patients that don't breathe well, you know, their nervous system, it's under duress, guaranteed to start. So I'm already going to take a different approach with that patient as opposed to someone who can already just nicely give me an easy belly breath and they're able to fill that diaphragm and let it drop down and they're able to control their breath on the way out. And that's a, you know, that's interesting physiology as well. And then from the diaphragmatic breath, you know, the nose breath is critical. You know, and that's a whole, you know, that we can talk about that when you're ready, if you'd like to, but you know, that's what the 1993 Nobel Prize for Medicine was won for, was the, from the, for these three scientists that, that discovered what happens when you breathe through the nose.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about nose breathing versus mouth breathing. Why is that important? Why do we need to become nose breathers?
Well, there's a guy named Brian McKenzie that has something called the or has a website called The Art of Breath.
Yes.
And he teaches diaphragmatic breathing. He created CrossFit Endurance and then kind of walked away from that when he saw everybody going for numbers and weights as opposed to technique and mechanics. So nose breathing is critical because what we found out or what the scientists found out was that up in our sinuses, There's a gas manufacturer called nitrogen oxide, and certainly weightlifters know a bit about this stuff, but it's a gas that if you breathe through your nose mixes with the oxygen and actually increases the ability for your bronchi to dilate to allow more oxygen into the lungs. It also allows oxygen to go deeper into the lungs, into the lower lobes. And from that point, if you have nitrogen oxide in the blood, it allows that new oxygen to be forced up into the upper lobes after going through the lower lobes and then into the system. So they say 10 to 15% more oxygenation easily by doing that. Now, what was also really interesting was it sterilized the air. When you breathe through your nose and the nitrogen oxide mixes with the oxygen, it sterilizes that oxygen. So I thought that was really cool too. It just makes a lot of great sense. So our nose is a filter. Our mouth is an incubator. That's another way to think about it. One of the things too that was interesting, even with a mouth breath, when you exhale, if you exhale through the mouth and in the yoga way, you put the tip of your tongue on the roof of your mouth, that actually creates a back pressure into your throat when you breathe out slowly. And that back pressure pushes against the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve controls sympathetic, parasympathetic nervous system. So by putting that pressure against that nerve on a slow release, you are actually stimulating the parasympathetic nervous system to come on in. So when we look at an athlete, right, we've all seen an athlete on TV before a big play. Just invariably, they're just going to start taking a deep breath, right? We've all seen that. And why? Did coach tell him? No. That's the kind of the innate sense of the body saying, let's calm down. Let's be in the moment. And that's a way to break into the zen or break into focus each time. You can get into the zone just by breathing through the nose.
So do you teach breathing techniques to athletes specifically, or does that just happen naturally? Kind of like
no, saying? No, it's got to be taught. You know, it's a technique, right? So we breathe over 23,000 times a day, Scott. 76 million times in our lifetimes we breathe. We should be pretty good at it, don't you think? We should have learned that a long time ago.
Right.
So it's important for me as a clinician to kind of be the vector to teach this very, very important skill.
One of the guys that has struck me as just being so profound in teaching people about their own body's intelligence is Mark Divine. Interviewed him from Seal Fit. Everyone knows him.
That's right.
Across the world, really. And he teaches box breathing.
Okay.
Tim also does a variation of this box breathing with his athletes. But what I like to do is the 5-5-5-5. So it's literally a 5-count inhale, 5-count hold, 5-count exhale, and then a pause for 5 at the bottom. And this really helps me personally. You know, if I'm getting on a podcast, like before we did this, I took my 5 deep breaths. I didn't tell you that, Tim. And you're just understanding that breath is everything. It's actually tattooed on the inside of my right arm, you know, se posso respirare, posso scegliere, which means if I can breathe, I can choose. I don't have to be a victim of my circumstance. I can drop into a heavy moment in sports or a heavy moment in the boardroom or, you know, a stressful moment with my spouse. Like breathing is everything. And I think just cueing people to do that box breath is so powerful. It seems so simple, right? Like our logical mind says it can't be that simple. We can't just do 5 deep breaths and a 5-count and reset our nervous system. Well, we can. And I think that's really, to piggyback on what Tim said, it has to be taught. It has to be something we have a conversation about. And that's why it's so powerful for us to have this reminder conversation about breathing today.
Yeah. And you know what? Most of the stuff I talk about is really not about re-educating or not about educating the body. It's really restoring the body. Because if you look at a kid breathe, oh, they breathe beautifully. I mean, they've got no stress. We watch a kid that's under 4 move, especially about up to the age 4. Oh, they move just like they've been trained.
Their squat looks pretty good too.
Their squat looks beautiful. Yeah. Everything's aligned. It's just natural. There's no stress. That's the way we were kind of born to move. And then all of a sudden at about age 5, we start going to kindergarten and put ourselves in these chairs and stay static. And our bodies start to change and alter. And it's not a great thing. We all know that. We all live that. So the breath can be just so dynamic for us and such a key component to our abilities to maximize not only function as far as movers go, but function as far as immune goes, function as far as mind health goes. It's really incredible. I mean, function if you've got constipation, there's breathing techniques that you can use for that. You don't have to go to the laxative. It's wild. It's really a great connector to the mind and the body.
In an ideal world, if you could have everybody do a daily breathing practice, what would you have them do?
Gosh, you know, if it's a worldwide thing, I'd go, you know, I'd say, just give me 10 breaths and I don't care what technique it is. They're all pretty close, but I would probably just give them the 4-7-8 technique, which is super common in yoga. It's 4 seconds in through the nose, hold for 7, and then slowly let it out in 8, either through the nose or with the tip of the tongue against the roof of your mouth. And just do that 10 times. I guarantee you there's not one person on this planet, or certainly not one patient that I've ever met, that hasn't changed them profoundly right then, right there, and oftentimes before the 10th breath. It's a big game changer.
I'm also going to ask, is there an ideal position? Again, in an ideal world, if everybody's doing this, should they be standing, sitting, supine? What would be ideal?
Yeah, great question. You know, ideally you're kind of, you know, you're sitting on the ground and you're sitting in the kind of the lotus position, because that allows the spine to align and the chest to open and diaphragm to drop and the belly to be relaxed. That's the ideal position. But you know, I'm not picky. If you're going to breathe, I say breathe at any time, but ideally, yeah, it would be either laying down, knees up and bent, you know, that would be a great way too, such as they might do in balloon breathing. So as long as your body is in a position where you can be relaxed and get full benefit, that would be great. So I think sitting in that lotus position would probably be my favorite.
I'm going to ask each of you this question, and I've asked it to really a handful of guests on the show. What is good movement to you? How would you define that?
I think good movement to me is taking a body through its full range without pain. You know, take the body through its natural range of motion, how our ancestors have been doing it for so long. I think really it comes down to what we talked about in the beginning too. It's, can you squat effectively? Can you change levels? Can you push and pull? Can you have locomotion? Can you have rotation? If you can do those things without pain, and you could do them in a way where you're efficient, I think that's beautiful movement to me.
Yeah, for me, it's fluidity, it's rhythm and synchrony, it's a lack of stress. It's actually using gravity, the field of gravity, to propel your body along, as opposed to the reverse, which most of us use by walking with weight on our heels and pounding into the earth, as opposed to rolling across it. So it's that fluidity. And as Josh mentioned, it's having range of motion in your joints is really important, because having the mobility in your joints tells us about the health of your muscles. If you have that range and your muscles are being pretty good shape. So it's really kind of those things, I think probably define good movement. Having a really good hip hinge is critical, because that's the beginning of a squat, and you're going to be squatting a few times in your life. So that's really important. And then, walking with alignment in mind, and understanding the value of alignment will help each individual self-coach themselves as they move along. If they do an exercise where their body's out of alignment, they know they're in peril. And so I think that that's a really kind of a critical component too.
And what made me think of that question is you mentioned about kids, you know, how they can move so well and dynamically. I think it's a really interesting question. I've had some interesting responses to that.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I was to take that into consideration again, I would say, what is good movement? Moving like a kid.
Everybody understands that too. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. That's what stimulates me to do my work is I surf. That's kind of the thing I do daily. And, you know, being in my 60s, and the board's getting smaller and more technical, I want to be able to benefit from that. And so the only way that I can benefit from that is to keep my quickness and keep my mobility. And, you know, rest never sleeps. So you got to keep moving.
Hey, and let me ask you this. This is really interesting. So you're a surfer. So do you find that you have to do extra movement/mobility work? Does surfing maintain your mobility?
You know, great question. And we call this episode, do you train to surf or do you surf to train? And you know, as a kid, you could certainly get away with surfing to train, but more and more, and certainly with the young professional surfers that I work with as a medical director on the World Surfing Tour, You know, that's really what I promote is, look, you guys feel great today, but if you really want to learn and be wise before your years, you've got to really learn movement, because as good as these kids are and as wiry as these kids are, they still have the very same imbalances that I see on athletes that are older than them. It's just that they haven't gotten to the point where it's reached critical mass and now they're injured or their performance is decreasing. So we use something called Gymnastica Natural as one of the workout techniques we use for surfers. It's a combination of Hatha yoga, jujitsu, gymnastics, and moving like an animal. And we also use what's called foundation training. And foundation training is was created by Peter Park and Dr. Eric Goodman. And yes, it is training for the posterior chain. So it's putting yourself in different postures and in different movements that all focus on toning the posterior chain and activating the posterior chain, because the front of our bodies are so overused and understretched. So with that technique, you get a 2-for-1. You get a nice stretch in the anterior chain, but you're constantly toning that posterior chain and allowing you to stand taller.
Yeah, Dr. Goodman's been on. I've had a couple conversations with him. He's great. His work is foundation training, and we've talked a lot about that, the hip hinge, of course.
Yes, critical.
Yeah. Tim, talk about the IntelliSkin. I think you alluded to that earlier, but talk about, you know, what that is, where people can go to learn more about this.
Yeah, they can check out IntelliSkin.net. And what it is that it's an intelligent second skin created based on a taping technique, SPRT, that I innovated back in the late 80s working with the pro surfers and the beach volleyball players. It's kind of the necessity being the mother of invention, working on athletes in the sand and in the water, that old school conventional taping, the white tape, the Zonas tape that many athletic trainers used in the past and, in fact, still use today, just wasn't working in the beach and in the water. So it was before the worldwide internet was real. So I started to write different medical supply companies from different countries to see what kind of tapes their surgeons and trainers were using, and ended up finding this Kinesio tape in Japan, and ended up finding Leuco tape over in Germany, and then found some Coverall from some people that were using it in Australia, and started to mix these different tapes. And my goal, Scott, was to create anatomy on the skin. If you tore a muscle, I'm basically going to knit it back together in a linear fashion as opposed to the circumferential fashion, which is what we all grew up with and what we were used to. I didn't like that feeling of being wrapped like a mummy as an athlete. And I wanted to be able to put these athletes in something that would protect their injury but would allow their healthy motion to carry on. And so I was able to put together this taping technique, and it grew vastly in popularity over the next few years. And I was getting letters, and because AVP, the Pro Beach Volleyball tournaments, were on TV at that time. And so the AVP would get letters from their audience saying, what the hell do you think these two strips of tape are going to do for anybody? What's that medical director smoking? It's crazy that he thinks it's going to help an athlete. And so just like as it turned out, you know, when you create something new, at first people just laugh at you. And then they become a little bit more curious, and then they start asking questions, and then all of a sudden it's part of the routine. So as the lines grew outside the tent for these athletes to get taped with this technique, one of the athletes, Sinjin Smith, who was world champ at the time, said, hey, man, when are you going to make something I can just put on and take off that's like your tape, but I don't have to call you up and get an appointment to do it? And that night I woke up in the middle of the night, and I had a perfect vision of what this would look like. And so I was traveling at the time. I had a wetsuit in my bag. I took out the wetsuit, my training scissors, and the hotel sewing kit, and I made the first of what we call IntelliSkin today, which is, it's a system that allows you to stimulate the cutaneous nervous system. So you're stimulating the sensory motor system through the skin, and you're putting a specific pressure at a specific angle on a specific spot to get a predictable response in the body. And I certainly didn't create it with that in mind, but as it turned out, that's what we were doing. So I made this prototype, and I put it on an athlete the next day. It was actually Sinjin's partner. He had a terrible rotator cuff injury. He was Randy Stokos, about 6'4 and about 240, big monster guy. And he was putting on my wetsuit, and I'm 6 feet, about 180. But the thing worked so well that he wore it the whole tournament and refused to give it back to me. So I knew I was kind of onto something. And there happened to be somebody in the crowd from an orthopedic company that saw him wearing it, came up and asked me some questions, and we formed a relationship, and I started to build braces for him, or support systems. I really don't call it a brace, because a brace to me is a mechanical thing, and it makes you dependent on it. It makes you weaker. And I really wanted to create something that stimulated the body's ability to align itself, to centrate, and to take the treatment that I was trying to accomplish in the tent or at my clinic and put it on a patient and allow that treatment to last a lot longer and again, stimulate the body throughout the day to be in alignment. And we just, you know, we had crazy good results. And then we decided to have Dr. James Andrews do a study on it. And he put a bunch of pitchers in the shirt and measured their pitching speed after doing a VAS scale analysis, meaning that he asked the pitchers to fill out a form that said, what kind of pain are you in and where's your pain?
Right.
And so after the 60 pitches that each pitcher threw, the average increase in speed was almost 2 miles an hour for every pitch. And the VAS scale went from an average of a 7 on each pitcher down to a 3. And we were amazed. I didn't develop it for that, but I was certainly excited that we were getting those kind of results. So at that point, we went from about 3 Major League Baseball teams using it to about 25 that next year, just based upon that study. So it's really important when you create something new, if you can quantify it, it really helps. And certainly I'm a science-based guy, so it was really important to me. And then we did another study with a UCI volleyball team. They're national champions. And Michael Shepard, who's now the orthopedic surgeon for the Angels, was a shoulder specialist, was a team doctor. And so he did the study for 2 years, and they had 0 days missed for shoulder injuries over 2 years. And in that sport, as a player myself and then as a medical director for that sport, I didn't believe my own statistics or his statistics. I thought that was impossible. Wow. So we're pretty amazed at what alignment can do. Certainly in this case, it was scapular alignment, because volleyball players are notorious, as well as pitchers and all overhead athletes, for having scapular dyskinesis. So I was fortunate enough to be able to study with the godfather of the scapula. His name is Ben Kibler, a medical director or an orthopedic surgeon and researcher out at University of Kentucky. And he really was able to school me on what I needed to do and what I needed to focus on to make this this new creation a reality and something that was real and not just a panacea or a placebo.
Well, I'll tell you what, that is fantastic. It's so funny, as you were talking, I mean, I was going to ask, is there any science behind it? And you answered those questions.
Oh, good.
And, you know, I actually met Dr. James Andrews once. I mean, he's unbelievable. Have a guy like that behind your study and the techniques and things that you're doing is amazing. So congratulations.
I'm really honored. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, guys. How did the two of you come together?
I interviewed Tim on the podcast last year. Okay. And I was just so taken aback by, first of all, I have to be really authentic here. I didn't think it worked. I was like, what is this? Is this like smart compression? What does that even mean? I kind of dissed it in the beginning. And I haven't told you this yet. And I think a lot of people do that.
I want them to.
So I was like, all right. And then they sent me some. And I literally, to the touch, my rhomboids were sore the next day. And I thought to myself, okay, there's something going on here. So I got in touch with his PR company. And we kind of just like unrolled this natural conversation of how do we take our messages that are so in alignment, speaking of alignment, around this physical intelligence, and how do we tell each other story and truly raise the same boats with the same tide? And so that's how we came together. We did the Rockstock event last year. Rock Tape was there. So many awesome brands that probably, you know, those founders have been on your show, Scott. And we start telling this narrative around the wellness approach that looks like a wheel. You know, the body is this continuum of learning about how do we breathe, how do we move, how do we eat, all these things. Right. And it's so what I want to know about for my own self. You know, everyone listening, anyone that's a human being, hopefully, stays curious about what makes our emotional and physical intelligence rise. I mean, if we're stopping the curiosity, then we're really not going anywhere. We're kind of dying in a way. And so Tim and I came together to figure out what's the truth. Can we just take out the agenda? Can we take out our emotions from this thing and really tell the story about this is what we found from academia and also our personal experience around what tools, technology, and ways of being helps the body be the most efficient in the way it moves? And so, you know, our messages really dovetailed at that point.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's well said. Yeah.
Well, I feel like we covered a lot. I feel like we covered a lot of great topics and some specific things around breathing, posture, your approaches, movement. But I also feel like we kind of only scratched the surface here. So where can people go to find you online, you know, best place for social media and things like that for each of you?
So we do a show every Friday that's, you know, a Stand Tall series. So you can look on Instagram, you can go all over the web. It's hashtag Stand Tall. And it's really, you know, a timely topic emotionally and physically for people to stand tall. There has to be a continuous conversation around them doing so. And so every single week, every single Friday, you can listen to the best of the best experts around this movement and breathing and posture on Wellness Force. You can also go to the Wellness Force website, tons of resources there. IntelliSkin.net is Tim's site and his creations. And we're just going to continue this conversation, Scott, around how do we efficiently help the body do what it naturally does.
Yeah, there's you can go online and just kind of maybe just query my name, Tim Brown, Dr. Tim Brown. There's probably 50 articles out there or something that have to do with movement and athletes and trying to figure out a way to keep them away from me.
You're not going to have a hard time finding Tim's work online, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that's excellent. And again, I have to say, like, I'm super impressed about the research that you mentioned. And, you know, that certainly got my attention for sure. And a couple more questions here, and then we will wrap up a couple of my standard questions. Now, I'm going to ask a different question for each of you guys. I usually ask, what is the number one book that you recommend? What I'm going to ask you guys today, and I'm not sure why I'm asking this, but what's the book that maybe you're reading right now, or the book that you read in the last month or so that maybe is making a difference some way in what you're doing?
I go through so many different, I kind of cherry pick to tell you the truth, you know, but, you know, Eric Goodman's new book is really good. Peter Park just came out with another great book that's excellent as well. And, what about you, Josh?
Yeah, I am a huge fan of holistics. I went to the HLC course at Paul Check's center. And so I love Eat, Move, and Be Healthy by Paul Check. That's one of my all-time favorites. And also really timely here too, Scott, the 12 Rules for Life from Jordan Peterson. Now, he's been in the news a lot, especially with his interview on Rogan lately. But I'll tell you, there is a chapter in his book, and the chapter is called Stand Tall, which I think is fascinating because there is an emotional component to this physicality. Everything we do from our physical lens shapes and colors our emotions. And so I'm loving this book right now, 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Change by Jordan Peterson. I actually was listening to it on the way up to Tim's house.
Fantastic.
Yeah, you know, one more I want to throw out there is something I'm passionate about spreading the word on, and that's ice. So there's a book called Iced.
Yes.
And, you know, the physiology behind ice and the history of ice is one of the most unbelievable stories, you know. And, you know, ice, you know where ice comes from in our therapy, Scott? It comes from a guy who got his finger chopped up back in the 40s. And so they had a thermos nearby, had some ice in it, and they threw that finger in the ice, rushed him to the hospital. It was the first time they were ever able to save a limb and reattach it. So ever since that day, if you are injured, you're supposed to ice. That's the science behind it. Isn't that something?
So it is. It is. That is a rabbit hole we could really go down.
That's a whole other podcast.
I've been living in that rabbit hole.
That is a follow-up you know, interview, man. I'll tell you right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah. Because the physiology behind ice, you know, as Gabe Merkin, the guy that created RICE, rest, ice, compression, elevation, did, I apologize profusely to all my patients the last, you know, almost 40 years. Well, not that long, because I've been off of ice for about 3 years, Scott. But yeah, you're right. That is a big old wormhole, and the story needs to be told. And you know what's wild? I was asked to speak at one of the major, I won't call them out, okay? But one of the major ball and stick sports, their whole training conference. I was asked to speak. And so my talk was going to be on the end of the Cold War, or is it? And I had spent months preparing for it and got all my, you know, all the literature done, all the science, everything ready to go. And they canceled me. And they canceled me because of the economics of cryotherapy. So you got $1 billion yeah. worth of athletes, and you're going to compromise them because of an economic choice.
Man.
So, wow. you know, that's kind of part of our battle, right? Is the old guard. Is sometimes it's tough to unscrew some of those rusted on bolts sometimes, right. even though you got something new and fresh and better. So I was really, really, really blown away. But again, you know, we just look at our economy, and it is all based on, you know, what's going to make us the most money.
Right. Right.
Now, today.
Well, like I said, I'm not going to touch that subject as much as I'd love yeah. to right now.
Yeah,
but I will ask you the last question, the closing question here before we wrap up, question I ask everybody, but is there a simple, actionable takeaway that maybe each of you can offer the audience, whether they're a coach or an athlete, some type of practice, something that ties together that we talked about in this conversation that they can take away and take action with?
Yeah, you know, the first thing that pops into my mind, besides that little 10 breath drill
yep.
that I mentioned,
okay. yep.
is get the hell out of your chair. Get out of your chair. Buy yourself, a $30 yoga pillow or a meditation pillow, and spend some time down on the ground in that kind of that cross leg lotus position. You don't have to, if your hips are too tight, get two pillows, stack them up, and time you'll be able to drop it to one. But it's a great way to unload your body, bring oxygen into your brain, your stomach, your muscles, etc. Because we know that when we sit in a regular chair, all that stops after 30 seconds. In fact, you can't even get an electrical measurement below the waist after 30 seconds when we sit. Everything shuts down. So this is a way for us to remain mobile, but at the same time, we can sit a little bit too. And then after that, everybody get up and do a stand-up desk. And when you're in the stand-up desk, you got to be on an uneven surface so that your body continually changes position, because just doing a stand-up desk will give you problems in the valves in your legs because you've got to move those things.
Yeah, so maybe having like a slant board or something like that for a stand-up
yeah.
desk, is that
Yeah, good? They have okay. They have these things. They look like skateboard, the top of a skateboard,
yeah.
and with a little unevenness on the bottom. It's not a huge challenge. It just makes you move a little bit more than you would if you were standing on a flat surface.
Okay, all right, good stuff. Josh, what do you got?
Yeah. You know, I look at this differently. Tim, being a movement professional and a chiropractor for so many decades, I see it through the lens of emotional intelligence when we look at this question, because self-awareness is key. If you're self-aware and you know what intrinsically motivates you or what extrinsically motivates you, just know that about yourself and just surrender to it. I think a lot of my life was spent fighting who I really was. And a lot of that was just kind of trying to do it all on my own and being the lone wolf. Once I realized that my real motivation, my inspiration came from all these things outside of myself, this extrinsic motivation, well, then I just built the framework of accountability to help me and guide me along the way. And I would say for anyone else that's listening, if you're, you know, doing the barbell training the best in your life, but you're not getting the results, or if you're going down a path of strength or being a strong mom or dad or just human in this life and you're not feeling like you're getting the most out of it, take an inventory, you know, become self-aware, go through that self-aware awareness journey and just know what motivates you. Is it outside framework? Is it inside? And if so, just really surrender to that and call in the support that you deserve, by the way, whether it's community, this podcast, anyone else, like you deserve it. You deserve a life of strength and moving well.
Nice. So I like that. We get a physical action and an emotional perspective there as well. So
yeah.
Guys, this has been great. Again, we only scratched the surface here, but a lot of great content. I really appreciate your time and insight.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it again, Scott.
Thanks,
Thank
Scott.
You.
All right, guys. Well, that is a wrap for this week's episode. Feels good to get back to the interviews here on the podcast, considering the things that have happened in the last couple of weeks. So I appreciate you being here. Thank you to Josh Trent. Thanks to Dr. Tim Brown. Check out their work and the great things that they're doing. And we'll have some great new interviews and sessions coming for you very soon. Remember to check out the resources I mentioned in the beginning of the show. And if you're not part of the Ardella Training community, go to ardellatraining.com/blueprint and grab a very effective 28-day program to improve strength and skill with a specific focus. So check that out. Again, ardellatraining.com/blueprint. Once again, I appreciate you. Thanks for being here, and we'll talk again soon. Have a great week. Take care.